Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and welcome to today's show. When I think about the harm done to women due to the perpetuation of patriarchal systems over many thousands of years, one of the real tragedies to me is the ways in which we've been disconnected from our bodies, and specifically our sexuality. We've been fed the notion of the virgin whore divide, which has told us it's wrong to be passionate and to embrace our sexuality. We've learned that our bodies are unclean, sinful, or needing of a lot of personal grooming in order to be acceptable. And all too often, we've been taught that sexual gratification and pleasure are for our partners, not for ourselves. And yet, when we look back at the historical record of the sacred feminine, whether it's through myth or iconography of goddesses and ancestral women, we see something really different. We see quite a lot of imagery of women who are unabashedly naked, whose sexuality seems to be celebrated, certainly not a source of shame. And we find stories of women and goddesses who are clearly reveling in sexual pleasure. So, how we went off the sexual rails is a topic for maybe a whole lot of episodes in the future. I don't know that I know the answer to that yet, but today there are a lot of people who are dedicated to helping women heal their relationships with their own sexual nature. And I'm really thrilled to have one of those people as my guest today, especially because not only she's a sister on the priestess path with me, but also a senior teacher carrying on the work of the late Dr. Shakti Milan, author of Sexual Awakening for Women, which has been particularly inspiring to me. Lisa Grace has spent the last two decades gathering tools to support humans in remembering their natural divinity while in this human-bodied experience. Beginning with a body-oriented background of acting, dance, and martial arts, Lisa weaves mindfulness and spirituality into the realms of kink, polyamory, and other non-traditional relating. Lisa is a Hakomi therapy-trained practitioner, a master practitioner of transformational neuro-linguistic programming, and a current student of the Western sacred sexuality practice, the yoga of intimacy. Lisa says she's on a mission to liberate the human heart expression of authenticity and is especially passionate about furthering conversations around gender, shadow work, and the queering of tantra. Lisa is pursuing a Master's of Divinity at the Pacific School of Religion and teaches with the Shakti Shiva Academy, the school form to hold the work of her most influential teacher, the late Dr. Shakti Milan. And she's joining us today from her home in the Bay Area of California. Lisa, I'm so happy to have you with us.
Oh, such a pleasure, Liz. That opening statement that you wrote is...
Let's dive into it. I'm so excited. And just this topic of honoring our bodies and our sexuality, I think it's something that women and men, but certainly we as women can't talk about enough. So I want to go through all of your background because, you know, there's a lot that I don't know what it is. And I want you to, tell the listeners about it too. But I love to start with you where I usually start with most guests, was just getting a little bit of a sense of your background and specifically your spiritual background and what that was like growing up as a child.
Yeah. Wow. This question keeps evolving, especially with that last piece of now being in seminary. So I'm pursuing the master's in divinity, so studying theology, which is not ever a path I imagined myself on. Both of my grandfathers were Methodist ministers. And so I was raised in, that's a fairly liberal denomination of Christianity. And there was quite a bit of awareness of equality and love in my upbringing that I'm very grateful for. But when I was quite young, I rebelled against going to church because it felt very shallow to me. And I didn't like what I was seeing. And I challenged my parents on that. And they allowed me to stop going to services with them. And yes, my parents have laughed about that over the years. But what I really delighted in at that age was going and getting lost in nature. And when thinking back on it, I had quite an attraction to getting lost. And I would try to get lost in the hills or to my parents' chagrin in department stores or wherever we were. I realized when I was young, I was kind of constantly pursuing that feeling of abandonment, of structure, and of being in tune with an emptiness and with a possibility. So my great love in that time where I was rebelling against church was to go and roll around in the grass and get muddy.
That's funny. It makes me think of, I had a similar experience, you know, the woods always felt like church to me way more than church did. And, you know, if we are programmed like that as children to know that there's so much sacredness there.
Yeah. And there was something there that I didn't have any terminology around sexuality at that age. But there was a vibrancy and aliveness that drew me. And now that I look back on it, it was the bridge to what I have now found, to a fully embodied sexuality that's in line with divinity.
Oh, I want you to say more about that. But I guess that's what our whole conversation is going to be. and I wonder, actually, I know, so, you know, for listeners, so Lisa and I have, you know, pursued a priestess path together that I've mentioned on this show a couple of times now, called the 13 Moon Mystery School. And so with 13 Moons, you're exploring different archetypes of divine feminine energy. But, you know, I want to ask you, and I have to say, just for those of you that, you know, aren't familiar with that kind of mystery school work, Lisa and I spent a lot of time together, but we didn't spend a lot of time together talking about our stories and our backstories. You know, you're in ceremony, you're kind of in a different place. So I guess, you know, what I don't know is, you know, when and how the sacred feminine specifically showed up in your life.
In thinking about this question, because I know you and I talked a lot about my feelings of divinity and the way it transcends gender, and we'll be getting into that more. And I remember as a kid, in part of my rejection of the institution of religion that I was feeling was in that image of the white man in the clouds with the white hair. And it just felt so not right. So as I've evolved with this connection with the feminine, what feels most valuable to me is just the possibility. It was when my horizons got broadened enough so that there was the possibility that it wasn't that man in the clouds. And that's quite the paradigm shift. Like looking in all of the iconography that we have of white deities and masculine deities, and in cultures all around the world, that's what's been accepted. And I think that the huge transformational shift could come from just starting to paint our deities differently and having that imagery more present in people's lives. And it opens this expansion of that it's not this one directive, and opens up the creativity and the imagination to be in the alternative rather than just in the binary fight of what it could be or not be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that doesn't exactly answer your question.
Well, it kind of did. I mean, I love the idea of the fluidity. I would say similarly for me, you know, thinking about the sacred feminine when I started, I had my own kind of realization of like, wait a minute, it actually took me a really long time to figure out like, hold on, I've been told that God is a man my whole life. And how did I just like accept that? You know, how was that just a given? And it did change things quite dramatically when I started imagining God as a woman. But I think it's important to, you know, or to think about that if we were to lock ourselves into God must be this or that, then we're really not, we're just trading one cage for another.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what so much of this work of non-duality, essentially, maybe it's time to get into that.
Yeah.
So with the greatest influence that I've had in my spiritual growth was with working with the late Dr. Shakti Malan. And she came from the Advaita Tantra school in South Africa. And also I should mention Leslie Temple Thurston of Core Light was very instrumental in her practices. But Shakti also had this really interesting flavor of that her doctor was in social anthropology. So she was coming into work with this great interest and wealth of knowledge about people and the way that they interact kind of socially and as human animals and in different functional configurations and in the power dynamics and hierarchies that get created. So that was very influential in her work. So she had this amazing masculine feminine balance in herself of having this incredible academic structure and the ability to tap into just complete feminine flow. So that was one of her amazing attributes. But in the school of non-duality, it's receiving that we are not separate. We are not separate from each other. We're not separate from divinity. And so it's allowing that framework to melt away. And it involves a lot of playing with polarities, of feeling into the extreme opposites. And so you're getting the full potential of the full spectrum. And this is ultimately what is contained in every bodied person. Because just consciousness and energetics is without gender. So this is why coming back to that question about the divine feminine, it's the feminine, I use that term as an energetic principle, just like a masculine energetic principle. And it's without gender. So the combination of those principles is what is foundational to existence, because we can't have one without the other. We can't have all flow, and we can't have all structure. We need the generative energy of the feminine, and we need the stillness of the consciousness. And it's about the movement of the relationship of the manifest and the unmanifest that allows for all creation. I read recently a beautiful way to put it, that the Shakti-Shiva relationship is linked to each other like fire and heat. That it's not separate. It's not, it's so ultimately entwined.
Fire and heat. I was thinking of that applying to other elements as well. Water and wetness. Or I don't know. Well, so I want to ask you this. I want to go back to what you said about the divine feminine not being gendered, but I think you can correct me if I say this wrong, but you know, sort of like a set of principles. Maybe I don't know if that's your word.
Yeah.
But where's the origin of those? You know, like if we think about what we call divine feminine, we call divine masculine, is that where the Shakti Shiva, is that the origin of those kinds of ways of identifying the polarities?
There's, if you go back in different origin stories or in different looking at different spiritual practices, this concept appears over and over, with finding some way to put a terminology or put an anthropomorphizing a humanization on those essences in a way that then the human mind can grapple with, because we need to do that. But it shows up in imagery and in a way to comprehend these vast energies in all the mythologies and spiritual practices, in terms like Shakti Shiva and yin yang. And so it creates a principle, just like we have the night and day of our 24-hour day. So you wouldn't have shadow without the light. You wouldn't have light without the shadow. You wouldn't have creation without the creativity and the energetic flow and the animation that comes with the feminine. And you wouldn't have that space without the consciousness and the stillness of the masculine.
So interesting too, to think about the idea of polarity being what can bring us into the space of non-duality.
Right. It's kind of a mind trip.
A little bit.
Yeah. And that could bring a lot of bypassing that I see happening with people trying to, how can I put this? We're getting into like the root of the whole concept here in exploring polarities. That it's about making conscious the pursuits and avoidances in our lives. So it's noticing the identification that comes along with the attachments. And the idea of this is who I should be or shouldn't be, or that is good or bad, or that is pleasurable, that is painful. So it's exploring the edges, like out beyond and into the complete polarity of those experiences, is the only way we can find our center. If people think that they're finding their center without that exploration, I'm very suspicious of that. because of course, I mean, the idea of balance is really beautiful. And it's just, where do you really know where your balance point, if you have come in with a closed heart or a closed mind and are just stuck in those pursuits or avoidances? So the polarity processing work is all about making those attachments conscious and acknowledging that as whole human beings, it all exists inside every one of us.
Yeah. And so I'm wanting to bring this into the sort of the, well, I was going to say the concrete, but like to bring it into the body of like what might this look like, or how does this kind of avoidance or the ways in which we get locked up, how does that play into women approaching and owning their sexuality?
Right. So looking at one of the primary polarities that gets played out in the masculine feminine and gets put on our bodies in a gendered male female in a societal expectation of what that looks like. And so in our bodies, we get very constrained by what a good woman or a good man means. And of course, there's wonderful ways to explore those concepts, but they're still staying inside of what has been the predominant patriarchal, which is hierarchical, typical binary power structure of our culture. And it's quite hard to recognize how to really break free of that structure and not get just swept up in trying to climb the ladder of that same structure, or being in the same game of this is how I get power, this is how I relate to that hierarchy. And so doing this work of embodiment and getting really conscious about our processes and welcoming of the totality of our energetic expression, it releases us from, you know, at a certain point of the veil that we've been holding over ourselves, of just where is the truth and the authentic expression and the integrity. And it becomes harder and harder to hide out in those shadowed places of what we have deemed inappropriate, or what it takes to fit in. So for women, you mentioned in your intro wonderfully, there's the virgin whore split, where it's women are kind of given these options archetypally of being totally loose and not respected whore presence, or being uptight and virginal and the pure. So you can see all kinds of polarities in the word choices there. And so stepping into a process of allowing just the full expression, and there's all kinds of ways to do this with the body, with just attunement, with breath, a lot of role-playing or dancing, or writing even, if you want to take it a little more cerebral to unpack it, but really allowing yourself to fill the space of the virgin and fill the space of the whore, and find the deliciousness and find the power that's been hiding out in both of those extremes. Mm-hmm. And noticing, am I preferring one or the other, or avoiding one or the other? And so creating the invitation to actually fully embody it. And I mean, of course, it's people often have the fear like, oh, if I let it out, if I actually acknowledge it's there, I'm going to be stuck there, or it's going to consume me, it's going to take over. And so it's really finding the space and the tools and the consciousness to allow the normalizing of the process and the bravery to look that tiger in the face and know that that's not going to happen, that this is all part of human expression, and that allowing it to become conscious will allow for the integration of it. It doesn't mean it's going to consume you. So that's a really common kind of kink in the process. So that's something that I offer and that I learned from Shakti. It's simply about witnessing and space holding and holding the place for the normalization of the intensity that allows the energy to be fully touched and then move and transmute into something new. So with feeling into the fullness of the polarities, like the virgin whore polarity, you cannot comprehend what will emerge. Like you can't predict exactly what will emerge in your system if you truly allow the alchemy of those experiences to move through you and invite the fullness of the power that is currently you know, shunned out into the, that's not okay, that's too much, that's not acceptable, that's not gonna get me what I want, that's gonna get me rejected, you know, all those fears. But it's something that everyone has inside of them, and everyone deserves to be in their fullness.
Yeah. And I was, as you were speaking, I was thinking about, you know, like what the ultimate, I don't want to use the word goal, but you know, the outcome of this kind of work. And I guess I just want to float this and have you react to it. It's, I mean, in my mind, what came up was the notion of play, like how liberating to be able to play with polarity from a conscious place, as opposed to feeling enslaved by it because of what cultural norms or, you know, whatever past life conditioning, your parents, like all that stuff has put in you.
Yes. Thank you for bringing in that word of play. Absolutely. Yeah, there's kind of an overarching trap of getting so serious, so serious about any kind of spiritual work or about our human dramas, our stories, when it's something that was incredibly infectious about Shakti is her laughter. If you listen to any of her recordings or ever sat with her, it was always right there. And sometimes I'm even concerned that I laugh when it's not quite appropriate, because I'm just being tickled by the joke of the traps that we put ourselves in when we build these boxes like gender and what we have to do to show up as a man or as a woman. And this, you just, the play is exactly where it's at. Of what we've mentioned, kink a little bit, that is one of my practices. When I met Shakti, she was using it quite a lot, actually. And then she evolved or changed into doing more of a focus on the sexual awakening for women work. But still in her modules, if you take one of the Shakti Shiva Academy courses, it weaves in some references to BDSM and kink, because that continues to be such an amazing tool. Because when you're talking about polarities and you're talking about this kind of play, the BDSM creates a field where you can consciously acknowledge these really edgy spaces, where it's leaning into where is the shame and other programming around sexuality, and what are your beliefs? What is taboo? And this BDSM plays with that head on, making the power dynamic acknowledged. And whereas, you know, most of the time in life, people are falling into these power dynamics and hierarchies without it actually being overt, without it being acknowledged consciously that that's what's happening. And so creating a container of space to play and or do a scene in BDSM work can create a very potent place to actually touch on exploring this pleasure fear dynamic that is a really good clue to what is being held in our subconscious. And that's the power of exploring any sexual fantasy, which BDSM is a great tool to do that. But exploring sexual fantasy is the material that's been caught in the unconscious and then is coming out in the form of fantasy. And so it's where the subconscious is trying constantly to reunite you with these spaces of yourself that were not felt fully or not acknowledged, or you know, usually things have happened as a child or in a past life where there's a part of us that didn't know how to deal with it. And so it gets relegated to that subconscious. And fantasy is a very juicy place where it comes out and is trying to give us messages about these parts of self that would like to be reintegrated. So that's something that BDSM allows. And yes, there is a lot of unconscious and stereotyped play out there in that genre.
Yeah, I was gonna say that did come up as too, is just I could hear exactly what you're describing, and also the safety issue though comes to mind of making absolutely sure that you're mm-hmm. engaging in people who are you know, have the same focus and pursuit as you.
Yeah. Okay. So this feels like a deeper piece to acknowledge of trust, of attuning with trust. Women have so many ways of overriding that, right? Of the expectations of behavior and of trying to please is such a huge one. But it's really about developing, first and foremost, a trusting relationship with self, that it's learning how to really drop in and listen to the body. The body is such an amazing messenger, holding all of the history and all of the desires, all the messages. If we just learn to actually slow down and listen. And then not only listen, but believe what we hear. Because there can be the trap of you think you know what you're listening for, or you want it to look a particular way. And that's just not what's there. And so getting the ability, like if I could give a gift to all women, that would just transform their relationship with sexuality and the world, and is a remembering of the power of simply listening to their bodies and then believing it as their full oracle. And it's the authenticity and the truth of this incredibly vulnerable space of holding a feminine polarity, because that's the one that's receptive and in movement. And it's a surrender that is a lot to ask of the feminine. And it requires trust, but the trust needs to start with self in order to really be listening to that attunement, and then find the yes and no in there. Of the ability to say, no, that is not what I'm wanting. Or yes, that is definitely what I want. And finding that attunement and being able to actually follow those cues.
Yeah, I think I'm so glad you named both the listening and the believing pieces. I feel like that is so relevant to this conversation, and just, I'm thinking of women's experiences in other areas as well. You know, I find, and I noticed in myself the same thing too, that I can see in other women a really good ability to listen to our bodies and our intuitions mm-hmm. and what we need, but a doubting yeah. of that wisdom yeah. and looking externally for validation for it, or, you know, all the ways in which we hold ourselves back. So I'm really glad you named both of those.
Yes, I do find that that's where a stoppage is much of the time. Of you mentioned the yoga of intimacy practice is one that I have found a lot in recent years with London Angel Winters and Justin Patrick Pierce, and they're real life partners, and they teach this beautiful practice that they call Western sacred sexuality, as opposed to a tantra practice specifically. But they use three pillars of relating. And the first one is presence, because you need presence in order to start. And the second one is polarity. And that is the playing with the energetics of the masculine feminine. They use the terminology alpha and omega, which I find very helpful for taking the gendered feeling out of it. And then the third pillar is devotion. So it's actually feeling like that ability to stay with. So that practice, is their practice tends to be, well, that's not entirely true. They teach a solo body practice and a two body practice of practicing these polarities. But what I've loved about finding their work so much is that it fits so beautifully with Shakti's work, especially the soulmate within practice. It's one of the courses that's still offered of her work, and is the work that first drew me into her in 2011. And that is really working with this piece of developing the inner alpha omega, or the inner masculine feminine, but of creating a familiarity with those energetics, so that you have an energetic agility inside of yourself to recognize what's most nourishing in any moment, and not being trapped in the expectations of the fitting into the image or the identity of one or the other. But that work, I mean, essentially it all comes down to breath and of feeling where the contractions are, and inviting breath to be touching those spaces. And so that brings it back to the really listening to yourself and listening to the messages in the body. It's just allowing the breath and sound and movement to find the spots where, you know, even numbness is a complete message. Like, oh, there's something numb there. And rather than touching on that and approaching it with expectation, like that shouldn't be there, or now my job is to get rid of it. But actually to just allow it to be touched with presence and breath.
I'm curious, if you're comfortable talking about it, just like your own journey to finding, you know, Shakti Milan's work, and, you know, what sort of pushed you in this direction, like curiosity or feeling of deficiency, and, you know, or how'd you get there?
Oh, it's hard to pick out one piece in this whole string of journey.
Yeah.
But I felt a distinct chapter. Like, there's my life before Shakti and my life after Shakti. But it had been brewing that direction with my degree is in performing arts and psychology. So I'd always been fascinated with people. And a lot of people don't recognize that when taking acting training, what you're doing is learning presence and learning about the tool of your body and your voice and empathy, about taking a script and unpacking it of what is that person's motivation, and fleshing out these words on a page into being a complete understandable person that audience can find catharsis with. So that really, I had no idea when I was pursuing that, but that really launched me into further development of just following one curiosity after another, of being in the body, being in expression. I've looked into how do you effectively communicate? What are boundaries? How do you hold boundaries? And I just want to toss in the work of Dr. Betty Martin and the Wheel of Consent, is incredible work for figuring out interpersonal dynamics around boundaries and energetic exchange. But it's, you know, little gems like that that come into existence. And with Shakti, it was reading the description of it was a 2-day experience of what is now the Soulmate Within work. And the way she framed it, I had never encountered before. Of it just completely blasts apart the myth of the looking for the soulmate dance that a lot of people are in. Of I need to find my one, I need to find my completeness. Oh, let me take another class or learn how to be more attractive or find the right person. And it's such, you can just feel the energy just leaking out that direction rather than focusing on the internal relationship, which I think people are afraid to frame it that way because it can sound a little narcissistic or self-involved, but it really is so everything. But releasing that energy back into the internal dance of the finding this soulmate partner within, of recognizing the fullness of the energetic expression that's available inside of your own body, and really looking at how can I show up for myself differently. And the foundational practice to that work that I encountered that weekend was what she calls the pillow talk, as it's essentially a gestalt practice. Yeah, it's not exactly how it sounds, because you literally set 3 pillows out on the ground, and then you have one pillow for the masculine, one for the feminine, and one for the witness, which is the equanimous space holder, higher self, non-judgmental witness space. And then facilitating a conversation with an individual moving into these 3 spots. So literally having a conversation between their own masculine and feminine. And it's extremely profound. And you can start that practice by noticing who in your life represents the opposite energy, that where there's an aliveness and tension still present for you, like a predominant relationship, and putting them on the opposite pillow. And so starting there, because the patterns and the dynamics that we're playing out in our external lives are directly reflective of what's happening in that internal relationship. So getting it out and named, and then with the assistance of the witness, of holding a loving equanimity for both of those voices, just is an incredible process for figuring out where the team is at inside.
Mm-hmm. That sounds so beautiful and juicy. And also, did you find when you did this, you encountered resistance? Like I can feel it in my body, even talking about it. Like,
of course, yes. And that's something to emphasize too. It's that's back to the expectations piece and of really listening to what's there. Like, that's beautiful to actually notice that there's some trepidation there.
Yeah.
And don't expect that relationship to just jump into perfection, happily ever after. How it works with any kind of courting, right? When it actually gets acknowledged of, wow, here's where you're putting the crunch on me. Using the framework of this masculine, feminine, and relating, I've found in the work of David Data, who's a little controversial, but also with Shakti Milan, she used the terms the unconscious, the conscious, and the deep as three, I hesitate to call them stages, but because it's not linear, people move between them all the time, but of these different ways of relating that people are either in the unconscious, the conscious, or the deep. And it's a helpful way of noticing what's available, where you can kind of summarize it that the unconscious is mired in the what is this going to do for me? And the conscious starts to become what can we do for each other? And the deep is what can we bring to the world? And so that is where the real, the magic of the divinity of this relationship can happen. And I'm sure you can feel that both in the internal relationship and the external relationship, that when you have the presence, polarity, and devotion, then it opens up the realm of that deep relating, where the attention can be more on what is the gift that this alchemy brings to the world.
Yeah. All right, I've got a question.
Yeah.
It's like a helicopter flying over right now while we're speaking. So let's just enjoy that, listeners, and we'll move on. And I don't know. Like, this is whatever. I'll float it, and you can either take it or bat it back to me. But there's a question that I've wondered. So I'm thinking about the sacred nature of this work and what you're describing. Mm-hmm. And let me see if I can put this into words. Sometimes I wonder if the ways in which we are separated from ourselves are those a product of the illness of our culture and the dysfunction of our culture, or just simply part of what it means to be human and why we're here? And these schisms that we're talking about, I mean, I think you can easily see in our current culture how this is exacerbated and made worse and reinforced. And so is it that, or is it that this is just what we're supposed to, this is part of the human experience. This is what we come here to do. It's a kind of, well, you know, if we are open to it, this is part of why we're here. I don't know. That's kind of, that's a deep one. I don't know if you want to take that one or not, but.
I'm picking how to touch this, because you just brought up a topic that I so much returns to, this of the illusion of separateness. The way that we as organic beings and animals have separated from the earth, and as spiritual essences have separated from divinity, and how men and women have separated from each other. So it's that illusion that causes so much suffering and so much pain about, even on, if you're on a track of being aware of it, there's the fight to get there. And so this is where it's coming back to that, it's the illusion that it exists. It is the root of the suffering. Because it's so easy to get stuck in the fight of trying to get back to what's not really lost. Just like in the partner and work I was just talking about, or the soulmate within work, of what it can do to personal power and presence and self-love to recognize ourselves as whole already. That doesn't need to be seeking anything or attempting to reunite with anything. And that's like a profound sadness to be stuck in the idea that we need to be getting back. I think this is the root of so much sexual violence, so much perversion. It's people in that severing, in that feeling of being cut off from what they are aching for in their deepest selves, of being total.
Yeah, I've also thought of the idea of, sexual violence towards women, like the root of that, and maybe there's not one root, but if one of the roots of that is just extreme, I think you're saying it, extreme disconnection too from your own, what you might identify as your own feminine nature, or yeah. Fear of it.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's the feeling that you're lacking. I'd like to mention a concept of desire, of object and subject desire. I have found a very useful concept where object desire is projecting onto a thing or a person that you need that thing in order to be satisfied. Whereas subject desire is the feeling, the experience of desire, and dropping into the experience as yourself, as subject, I am desire. Mm-hmm. And feeling the deliciousness of the connection with your heart and vitality, just in that recognition of I am my desire, and letting that fill your being. And you can feel just the texture of how different that is than an object relationship with desire, of putting it out there like something that needs to be caught.
Yeah, I can feel it as you're describing it. It's totally different. Mm. So I want to ask you about, I know you're in divinity school right now, which I think is amazing. But I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about this intersection of religion and, so spirituality and sexuality. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can get on board with that, right? Because it's like, yeah. It feels different to me, or I think of it in a different way. I did grow up in a really, liberal, I wasn't like super repressive, but I didn't grow up in a very liberal religious household, but it was, it definitely fell in more of the category of, I would say, did more harm than good in terms of thinking about my own sexuality or even what it meant to be female. And so I'm curious, where and how you're playing with the intersection of those two things. Because when I think of divinity school, I assume we're talking about religion, like specific mm-hmm. religious traditions, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I have found my way to the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley, California, which is a very liberal school. I couldn't be there otherwise, but they have quite a focus on social transformation and social justice work. And what drew me, even before I was aware of how amazing that program is, and they also offer a specialization in sexuality and religion. But when I started just looking into this seed of this calling, it was because in my work with clients, it's become harder for me to separate the two, to when working with sexuality and the body and simply presence, like simply just being in the moment. It's gotten pretty impossible for me to really work with that without acknowledging the divine and acknowledging source, love of all, that one love, whatever word you want to put on it as being the grand order of things, of the genesis of energy, the infinite love, the, you know, whatever it is. And I noticed that when I start to bring in language of divinity, that people would flinch or contract. And it's just heartbreaking because I get it. Like you're saying, there's so much trauma around people who have dealt with different kinds of structured religion and how those institutions have grappled with control, with controlling the body, as especially women's sexuality. And it's because there's so much freaking power there. There's so much liberation available to all beings to connect with their breath and connect with the earth and just be in their animation of the moment. And so you got to control that if you're trying to have structured, orderly, you know, subjugation. So this is what drew me to this school, is to be able to have these conversations in a deeper way, and knowing, like even coming back to your first or second question of me and the recognizing the face of the feminine in the divine. For me, it's a lot of it is I just know that a relationship with divine that is anything but love, it has some kinks in it, like that it has millennia of human interjection, of human attempt at controlling and understanding and human identification of what the divine is, of what God is. And so what has drawn me to this education is this absolutely unwavering belief that God is love. And so how do we get back to a shared vision of that, where the love is allowed to be flowing more freely?
I love that idea. I love the idea. My head is going all kinds of places of wondering why we needed to put all the, you know, the power and the control around it in the first place. It's a simple question. Maybe you can figure that one out while you're in divinity school. Just like work that.
Yeah, simple question. I'll bring up one concept that I've been chewing on a lot lately, because you know, this touches on the extreme polarization that we've seen in politics and different expressions in our culture, that I don't believe in evil. Like, so there's been this big push recently that's really vilifying people that we don't agree with or people that have a different point of view. And it makes it impossible to speak. It exacerbates the separation as soon as level and calling other people evil. This brings it back to the neurolinguistic programming of holding the stance that everybody, every part of self has a positive intention. And it's understanding what that positive intention is that can start to touch on the need that's being addressed. And sometimes people make choices or take actions that are causing a lot of pain. So I'm not saying that doesn't happen. It's just, to me, it's getting to the foundation of the choices that people are making from moment to moment in their perspective. There's always a part of self in there. There's always a little wound or fear, something that's being defended or being fought for. But something that I'm looking at in school is the presence of structural evil, where a structure has come into play that is beyond the soul or heart space of us living beings and has taken on a kind of perpetuating existence of its own. Like a kind of concrete example we can see of this is in social media, of seeing that there's this system that was created to be helpful, right? To listen to people's preferences. And then it's created more and more of an echo chamber. And so this system that is now beyond our control, beyond any person's control, is kind of run amok in a way that is soulless. And so I'm really been chewing on that concept of, so how do we come together in returning to our humanity as human beings to grapple with this, with the systemic evil?
Yeah. And then it makes me think of that word evil, like, especially in the way that you're describing it is, well, I guess this is different than what you're saying, but I'm thinking of, I really feel that what you're saying about the wounded parts of ourselves and, you know, like recognizing that, you know, sometimes those parts of ourselves, or a lot of times those parts of ourselves are on, maybe on autopilot too, or we don't know they're mm-hmm. operating. They're sort of moving us one way or the other. And we can't see the harm we're creating, but then that harm can get out there. It's out there now. And it, you know, I don't know if that's the same thing you're saying, but it can become something on its own as well. Do you think that would fit in with your idea of structural evil?
I mean, that's a little different than what I'm saying. But yes, you're naming that people do then. It's being aware of the impact that you're having. And just looking around in social interactions these days, people are not very attuned to the impact that they have. And then, you know, there's all the twists and turns of, well, then that's your problem if you have a reaction to how I'm treating you.
Right.
But this, another, I just want to bring this in, of patriarchy, of, I think it's really important that we get to a place of being able to talk about patriarchy and the way that that systemic power structure controls all of us. It's not about saying men are bad or that men are doing something wrong. It's really a detrimental system to all of us, because in this whole tone of finding our wholeness and finding the alpha omega in everybody's being, it's these constrictions that have been set up are not kind to any human in their fullness. But it's just the dominant power structure. And it's so seductive, like, for women to get swept up into that. I know I talked about that earlier, about the getting caught on and just trying to climb the same ladder. And Shakti came up with a term for an aspect of that when we talked about the archetypes of the virgin and the whore, and a third archetype that she came up with was the women's union. The women's union is that very unconscious bond of women who put each other down because they don't want to rock the boat. It's that place of seeing, this is how the system works. So this is how I'm going to participate in the system. And it's totally unconscious. And that's a big space that tends to bash our fellow sisters, because it's the draw of don't mess it up. This is, if you can figure out how to play the game right, you'll be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that and putting each other in our place instead of stepping outside of that system and blasting through with our authentic nature and holding that clarity that can actually invite the world into fuller consciousness.
Yeah, and I wonder too, I'm thinking of like a interweaving of, I feel like you may be talking about this without even naming it, but the idea of colonialism and white supremacy, as I certainly see that, I can speak for myself as a white woman, you know, that those threads being part of that as well, you know, where like a sisterhood of silence, you're perpetuating the system that has kept also kept men in power who could take care of you.
Yes.
So, you know, may or may not be as present for Indigenous women, perhaps, or women who have not benefited from that system in any way.
I've been reading The Sum of Us by Heather McGee. It's a Black woman with social structure and economy background. And she came to realize that white people have an attachment to zero sum system and Black people don't. And that I think is really related to what you're naming of feeling a place inside of the power structure. That as long as we're trying to still play the same game, it's the same game.
Yep.
And it really requires stepping outside of it. Here I'm going to bring in some Jesus and actually learning this totally new way, new to me, way of reading about Jesus's word. And that the teachings really are an invitation to a whole new way of being. Like, that's what his chapter in history was just completely stepping outside the system, turning on its head what it meant to be clean and dirty and what it meant to be part of the inside group or powerful and the wealth, and just offering this completely new, lasting open, letting go of old story, inviting new story in. And I especially appreciate the whole mythology of his death and then rising again as being metaphorical for that. This is what can happen in evolution, is that the old ways die and new ways come in, but it's creating a spaciousness for the creativity of creation that is stepping outside of the old systems.
Yeah. Yeah, I've also thought of the teachings or the, not just the teachings of Jesus, but the that cyclical nature, you know, of the death and the resurrection is also pointing us back to nature as our best teacher. Yeah. that's what she does, or they do, you know, however we want to describe Gaia. That's what's happening around us all the time. That the birth, you know, the expansion, the flowering, the death, and then the starting it all over again.
Yes.
This feels so very rich. I feel like I could continue this conversation with you for hours, but I also feel like there's so much here that we've talked about, that it's good to let it just marinate deliciously in the body.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't talked about sex much at all. That was like, at some level, everything is sex.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, I know. I mean, and yet I feel like we very much have perhaps touched the essence, or the deeper place that maybe we're all hoping to go with sexual union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the potential of that divine union of surrender to the moment and surrendering to the alchemy of existence with our human bodies. Like, just to give my personal definition of Tantra, is that it's a spiritual practice that supports pure presence as the key to our divine potential. And it's expanding and weaving of internal wisdom and external stimulus into an ecstatically full human experience. And it's about melting those boundaries that keep us from being present with the gift of the right now moment, or as viewing ourselves as separate from all that is.
I love that. And I love the idea of a ecstatic human experience. I think we all deserve that.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I know. Okay, we could keep going.
I know, we could. I'm gonna well, maybe we'll have to do it again.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, maybe we could come back and have a round 2. And we could, you know, throw more sex in if we really need to.
Great.
Oh, well, Elisa, I want to thank you so much for your time. I also, you know, so I know that you teach with the Shakti Shiva Academy. I don't know if there's anything coming up that you want to mention, or how can people learn more about you if they want to learn more about your work?
Sure. Yeah. The Shakti Shiva Academy is finding its groove of the year-round classes that are being offered and growing as a school. But the next course, the next major course that's offered, and I'll be on the teaching team of, is the Sexual Awakening for Women course. And that starts in July. So you can find that by looking at ShaktiShivaAcademy.com.
Okay.
And I also offer coaching and sometimes my own workshops. And you can find me at sacredawakening.com.
Yes, and I will make sure I put that in the show notes. And I feel like you also mentioned a few different teachers too. So I'm gonna make sure I have those people, you know, those names from you, and I'll make sure to put those in the show notes too, so people can, you know, dive a little deeper at their own leisure time. Yeah.
Yes, Shakti, Justin in London of Yoga of Intimacy, Betty Martin.
Yeah, there were several. Yes, thank you so much. I also feel just like I learned a ton, and I also have a ton of resources that I can turn to start learning more. So I'm really, really grateful for your time.
Oh, Liz, thank you so much for your work and just this amazing, intricate, delicious fabric that you're weaving to call sisters into fuller expression.
Thank you. It's a joy. It's a joy to be in conversation with you and everybody else who joins me here, really. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I want to thank all you guys too for listening. As always, you know, if you like the show, you can subscribe to it. You can leave a 5-star review on iTunes. You can tell your friends about it. You can do all those things. And until next time, I will talk to you again soon.
Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com, where you can find show notes and other episodes. You can read articles about the sacred feminine, And you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.